very long time since last I spoke to you.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I'm not quite sure if you can hear me.
Yes, oh, yeah, you're quite well. Well. Yeah.
Very well indeed.
Go on, old friend.
Very interested in how I was getting on.
Oh, yes, we will be.
It seems such a long time since I last spoke to you, and I just thought I'd pop in and have a chat for a few minutes. It's Mike. It's Mike Fearon.
Oh, Mike. And how are you, Mike?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, it's so nice you've come through.
I sometimes pop in and see you.
Do you?
Because I know you're carrying on the jolly good work, you know.
Yeah.
The mother's with me.
Good.
And my brother.
Is Roger?
Roger?
All right?
Roger's here. Mother's with me.
Oh, good.
Good. And how is Mrs. Fearon?
Oh, she's very well.
Yeah.
Very much, no, obviously much happier. And of course you'd hardly recognize her. She's back to, well, her prime, you know.
Yes.
She looks so different. And she's so relaxed and so happy. And of course, you know, she had so much to put up with one way or another.
Yes.
She never really got over my death, you know. Physical death. And then, of course, what happened with my brother and all that,
yeah.
You can imagine. And, of course, she got very difficult towards the end, as you know,
yeah.
Life was impossible. Yeah. Poor mother, she certainly had plenty to carry.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, she's very well and very happy now, and I know she would very much like me to be remembered to you.
Please remember her to us.
Will she speak to us at some time?
Possibly, yes. I don't think that she's terribly keen to come and speak, quite frankly.
No.
You know, Mother, I mean, she has made vast progress, of course, but
yes.
Now she's here with us, she's sort of, well, in a way, more or less has lost interest with us. She's
yes.
Come with me today, it's true, but she's not terribly keen on coming back and communicating. I think, in fact, I know that the interest of Earth has diminished to such an extent that if it were not for us coming, she wouldn't bother, you know.
Yeah.
But she's well and happy and wishes to be remembered to you and sends all our kind thoughts.
Thank you very much.
But I just thought I'd pop in for old time's sake,
yes.
You know.
Yes, very nice of you to come.
I believe you're thinking of making a move.
Yes.
Goodness me.
Well, we don't know yet. We hope to.
Well, no doubt you will.
Yes.
If that's what you really want, because all your friends here will help you, I'm sure, to find a suitable place. I should think it'll be the last move.
Well, I'm not worrying about that. As long as I can keep on this for a few years yet.
Oh, I don't know. I suppose for a time, yes, bound to. Eventually, you've got to come over.
Yes.
And then Betty will have to carry on all the work herself.
Yes, I'd love to know.
But anyway, we're saying that we're sending a lot of tapes out now. We've sent over 1,000 out. So we've sent your
tapes all around the world, man.
A lot of tapes, 1,000. My goodness me.
Yes.
Oh, I always remember those early years coming back, talking to Mother, and happy times.
Oh, yes. Do you ever even meet the Red Thomas?
Oh, yes. I've met all sorts of people, of course. One used to know, I mean, people that I used to talk to on your side that are now here. Oh yes, the Reverend Drayton Thomas, he's a very nice man, he wonderful personality. I'm rather surprised he hasn't made more attempt at communicating. I believe in the early days of coming he did, but latterly I think he's become so immersed in his new life, possibly gaining all the knowledge and experience he can with the object later of communicating. I don't think he's going to make a habit of coming, certainly not at the moment. He's not with us now. I mean, he's not with us at the moment.
No.
Oh, of course, you've known so many people who've now joined us.
Yes.
I suppose you often wonder why they don't come through. I mean, that gentleman that passed recently, Mr. Shaw,
yes.
He's here, you know.
Jim is here.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think he's very anxious to make contact with his wife. Whether she'll be able to come to London and talk to him, I don't know. She's not at all well herself, of course.
Can he give us a message to give
her? Well, other than the fact that he sends her all his love and blessings and he's now fully awakened to his new life and he's very happy, and of course he's often in touch with her mentally,
yeah.
I think she's very much aware of his presence from time to time,
yeah.
And no doubt later, given the opportunity, he'll make contact with her, you see.
Yeah.
I mean, audibly, I mean, I know he's anxious to speak to her. In fact, I think he's already beginning to feel that well, there's so much he wants to convey, but this will have to wait, of course, till the right moment.
Yes. Will he speak to us at all, do you think?
Possibly, yes, why not? Yes. I'm sure he'll be only too delighted. I doubt if he'll be able to speak yet, but maybe later on, you know.
Yes.
Whenever I've been to you, I've always been fully aware of the, well, tremendous enthusiasm that you have, and of course you do attract an enormous number of people. I mean, you may from time to time get this or that person, but believe me, if you could see the, well, hundreds of people at times that are around you, not only when you come here, the object of speaking to someone, but in your own place. I've been there quite a few times, actually, although I shouldn't say this, I'm going to say it and hope that you understand why I say it, but I think that you might regret leaving where you are, you know.
Really, sir?
Well, I don't know. I think you've got so sort of settled in there and everything's so organized, and it will really be quite a job sort of sorting yourselves out and starting up again, don't you think?
Yes, yes, quite
a lot. I don't want to put you off. Yeah. I mean, if that's what you want to do, it's your affair. But, I mean, for instance, you take your work with the tapes and all that. I mean, you've got it all so nicely sorted out, haven't you?
We've got a good room up there, haven't we?
Yes, so that's what I mean. Now, of course, you've got all that to fix up again, and I suppose naturally that can be done, but I often wonder when people get restless, like George does, if I may say so, they get an itch, you know, to get up and get cracking, as it were, but it doesn't necessarily always work out as well as you think. I'm not saying it won't, if you move, but I don't know, I sort of feel that you're so settled in a sense there. I mean, perhaps in some ways you're not, but I mean, when you shut your front door, you are.
Yes, yes,
and, you know, and it's not too bad outside. And for what amount of going out you do, George, I would have thought you could have settled as you are. Perhaps I shouldn't say all this, it's not my business.
Oh, I think you do.
But I have a very strong feeling that you, although you'd be helped to find a suitable place, there's going to be an upheaval and take you at least a year to get sort of really sorted out. And that's quite a chunk out of your life when you want to get on with the work. Anyway, don't let me put you off.
I think you're right. Quite right. Right.
Well, Ellie, wouldn't let you put us off, Mike, but I agree with you and you know what you said.
Well, I've been thinking very serious, well, I shall slowly make a meal at all, where we shall stay where we are, because we're doing a lot of
work. Well, I think that you've done so much place where you are, and you're so sort of settled there the way, as regards to work, and you may not like the actual town, but in a way, for what little you see of it, or what little you time you spend in the town as such, I don't think it really matters.
Yeah.
And everyone knows where you are now, you've sort of got an address, and I don't know, I think there are always these sort of, like mother, you know, she couldn't settle, she was like a bee, you know, flower to flower, no flower ever suited her anywhere. Poor mother, she couldn't help it, I suppose, but I often think, looking back on her life, if she could have been more settled and more adjusted, but she couldn't. She was restless, and I think restlessness, in a way, is a bad thing. It can be a good thing in some senses, but when you're getting on in years, I think it's a good thing to get settled and stay there until the time comes to come over here. And I think, as you are now, you're able to cope very nicely, and you've got everything sorted out. And I think to regret in some ways, perhaps, and I may be wrong, I know my business, but I just feel more for George than for you. I think that you'd be well advised to stay put, although I'm sure if you want to move, you'll be helped.
Yeah. Michael, what are you doing now? Last time you came through, you were giving us a very interesting talk.
Well, I've been doing a tremendous amount of rescue work. That appeals to me because I feel that there's such a great need for helping people over, especially people who come suddenly and unexpectedly. And it's always a terrible shock. I mean, when a person's getting old and they're sick and ill and they gradually, you might say, release themselves from earth and come here, in a way it's not as bad as a person who dies very suddenly in war or accident or something like that, because then it's like, well, jumping out of one life into the other in an instant, but it is, you see, and in a kind of strange way, many people are living in two worlds at the same time. It's as if your conscious of the new world around you, and you're still very conscious of the material world and all the problems in the material world and the conditions of it, and it's as if you're living temporarily anyway in two worlds at the same time. I don't say this applies to everyone who dies suddenly by any means, but to a lot of people it does, particularly perhaps younger people and older people. You see, whether one realizes it or not, as one's getting older, even though one may pass over suddenly, there is an adjustment taking place. It's so subtle that you couldn't pinpoint it at all, but I think there is in the awareness of oneself or consciousness a realization that you are drawing, as it were, nearer to another world. That's if you believe in another world, you know, I mean, a lot of people don't, but you do get this sort of feeling, especially with young people, that they've been denied their lives, they've been cut off, and unwittingly, unknowingly, they perhaps resent. Sometimes you get people who are in an odd position, who are clinging to past events, past memories, families, ties, interests, hobbies, all sorts of things, and at the same time they're aware, gradually aware, that something terrific has happened to them, and they're sort of living in a sort of world which has a meaning for them and yet has no sort of solidity, no reality. It's as if they're trying to, without even realizing, trying to pull themselves away, and yet it's like as if the earth has a pull on them more when a person dies young and suddenly. That's why the tragedy of war is so dreadful. I mean, if one could see, for instance, over some of these places like Biafra and Vietnam, the conditions, the appalling crowd of well, tremendous feeling from thousands of souls who have been sent out of their bodies suddenly and unexpectedly, and they're clinging to the earth. In some cases, of course, you even get people who just don't even realize they're dead. They're just sort of carrying on as if they're still alive. And it's only when they begin to realize the people on earth they're associated with don't understand they're there, take no notice of them, they realize something's happening. And then they have this strange sort of reaction, and sometimes resentment, and sometimes they try to do things to attract attention, sometimes not very successfully. And then, of course, you get people who are so intense about everything that quite frankly, they do more harm than good without even realizing it. Sometimes you get earthbound souls who are not necessarily evil by nature or bad in their thoughts or actions, but in their mental state it's such that they make an effect without even realizing it, perhaps on some individual on earth, to do something which may be very bad. The reactions from what they're thinking and doing can be very bad. Indeed, there are many souls, for instance, on earth who, without realizing it, have been taken over by individuals who probably haven't long been out of your world, and they are acting contrary to their true nature, especially if they're very weak-minded. And some of the cases that you may have, even in mental homes, are a case of an obsession. You see, we on this side who have made some progress do a tremendous amount of work, not only with souls who are earthbound in that sense, but are trying to take away influences which by their very thought and nature are very bad upon the human beings everywhere. Of course, there are groups of souls on this side whose job is to work in mental hospitals.
Yeah.
There are also groups of highly evolved beings, and also groups of people who have made a study of human nature in all its many facets, and who are working on political leaders without much result, you might say, maybe, but even so, we're constantly striving to change the stream of thoughts. I agree that we're not making the effect that we hoped. There are some successes here and there with individuals, but we're appalled at the state of your world. We're appalled at the way the young, in many cases, are acting. This new society, if you can call it such, which you have, certainly is very symbolic of the age in which you live. And quite frankly, this in itself appalls us beyond belief, because we feel that everything is pointing to a state of affairs which sooner or later is going to explode, not necessarily in war, but in other senses, in other ways. In other words, we feel that this permissive society, as you call it, yeah, is heading for disaster, and sooner or later there will come tremendous upheaval politically, morally, mentally, and spiritually, in fact, in every sense. And I think there will be a kind of world revolution. I don't mean necessarily a revolution in the sense of past revolutions, but I think there is going to be a tremendous amount of upheaval and friction. I think that there's going to be a tremendous a swing, if you like, to and I hope this will not be too long, to sanity, because the world is becoming more and more mentally sick and mentally ill. It's not only an individual thing, this is becoming a collective thing. The whole Auric emanation from not only one country, but from many countries, in Europe and in America in particular, is such that, frankly, one can only see the outcome as being one of, well, tremendous. It's difficult to put this into words, because it just seems to me that it has to come, and there will be a tremendous amount of internal strife in various countries, and even in Russia I think there's going to be tremendous upheaval there, and in America there's going to be, well, a state of affairs exists which is beyond belief. I don't think for one moment there's going to be world war as such, but I think that in nations, and every indication suggests this, that there must be, and there will be, a tremendous upheaval in various countries, which will be a form of revolution, but not the kind of revolution of the past. It's going to be a revolution in ways of thinking and action, and I don't think there will be all that much bloodshed, although there will be in certain areas or districts. It seems to me as if the whole world is going to be divided, possibly more than it's ever been, but not only divided between nations, but divided in nations, in countries. I think that, because I doubt if you might just see the beginning of this. I'm not talking about the immediate future, I'm talking about in some few years' time. And of course there's going to be tremendous progress made in space. And I think that before very long there will be reactions coming in that direction too, which will not be as beneficial to the world as possibly those in high places think. I think, quite frankly, that man is going to obviously suffer from his mistakes. He's going to learn his lesson, and it can only be learned the one way, and that is that if you do something which is detrimental to nature, which is detrimental to the human race, which is detrimental to life, as man knows life over centuries, experience of time, you cannot disrupt, you cannot disturb, you cannot go fighting as man has been fighting for a long time in different senses and different ways, nature and naturalism, without it having its own reaction. There are going to be some extraordinary happenings. I'm saying this well in advance, because all the indications clearly point to this, that man is going to learn from his experience, good, bad, and indifferent, and certainly he's going to have to readjust his thinking, he's got to readjust his way of living, and there will be some very tricky, trying situations arise, which, knowing man, he will overcome eventually. But I'm afraid for the future generation to come, particularly the younger generation of children, when they reach maturity, it's going to be an age which, quite frankly, I wouldn't personally want to live through, because I, in a sense I shall from this side, but as indeed you will, thousands of us, millions of us, try to help. But man has got to learn that he can go so far and he can go no further as regards disturbing the natural elements.
Marco, what do you think about, do you think these youngsters, there seems to be a terrible amount of drug addiction these days, doesn't there? Are they being influenced from the other side, you know, people
I think one must always remember, and I think this is something that every spiritualist or everyone who is interested in this subject should be made to understand, that there are good and bad influences. But that is all the more reason why one should approach this whole subject in the right spirit, in the right sense, and that as you are yourself, to some extent it's true to say, so you'll attract around you and to you. If your motives are good, if your desires for good are such that you wish to be of real service to humanity, to forget yourself, and in the process of forgetting yourself, learn and build up your own character and personality, so well and so good. But you see, so many people use this subject for an ulterior motive in the wrong sense, the wrong way, and they're more concerned with material things as to this, that, and the t'other concerning their personal lives, and they look upon this side of life as an avenue of knowledge to benefit them materially. This is all wrong. Unless you approach this in the truly spiritual sense, which is entirely different from a religious sense, it's got nothing to do, of course, with church or Christianity or any particular ism as such, though you can utilize the good out of all. But nevertheless, I think one's approach must be with a completely open and free mind, with the one desire to learn that which is good and put it to practice in your lives and to help humanity. If one approaches it in the right way, then of course you will protect yourself against bad influences. But if you have these tendencies, as some have, for things which are not good, then of course you will be, if you allow yourself to be possessed by entities which are not good and who will mislead you and misguide you. In other words, I think it's true to say that you will get out of it what you put into it. And so many don't put anything of worth into it in their investigations, in their desire for knowledge. Some lose the path and some get misled and waylaid.
Michael, to go back to your rescue work, now what happens to a person who commits suicide? They commit suicide, their motive is they want to get out of it all, and yet they don't believe in an afterlife. They think when they're dead, they're dead. Now how do you rescue those people? What actually is
that? Well, I don't like the word rescue in a sense. I know you mean well by that, because I think one has to adjust one's idea and one's mentality to this whole business of what you term suicide.
Yeah.
I'm not condoning suicide, and there are many reasons for suicide. I mean, there are many people who take their own lives who are mentally sick anyway, who are not altogether responsible. There are some who are so unhappy and so sad and so lonely and so depressed and so everything, you know, that one can forgive them, one can see the reasons. You see, I think people put too much on this business of death. That's the tragedy, you see, that people finalize everything with death. And of course, the mere fact of a person taking their own life doesn't stop there. I mean, they really, in a sense, only begin to live when they die, in the fullest sense. And of course, the fact of taking one's life is in itself, you might say, a form of punishment, inasmuch that you wake up to your responsibilities, you realize you haven't escaped from yourself, you haven't really escaped from the circumstances. Indeed, they become, in a sense, more conscious and aware of these very conditions from which they were running away. I wouldn't like to suggest for a moment that we think that suicide is a good thing, or that we agree that people should do it if they don't want to face up to things, or in other words, they want to run away. You can't run away from yourself, you can't escape. Of course it's a good thing for people to fight and to struggle and to overcome if they can on the material plane, but there's a misconception, I think, that suicides are punished. No one can punish anyone. There's no court here, no law here in that sense. There's no judge to judge. Man judges himself, he punishes himself, and if he takes upon himself the right, if you like, to take his own life, it is his life to do as he wishes with. But then again, you see, He doesn't really take his own life because it's impossible. You may take the physical in a sense, but then again, on awakening here, you are still very conscious of yourself and your past and the conditions. And indeed, in a strange kind of way, you punish yourself. You don't run away from yourself, you don't escape from yourself, you're left with yourself. And although you may not have, in a sense, the same physical material problems, you are faced with other problems which you've created, because you can only learn by experience, whether it's material on your side during a material existence or whether it's on this side in a spiritual sense. One must never run away with the idea, because you are dead, as the world terms it, whether you die naturally, normally, or by your own hand, that everything, once you've got past that stage of death, that everything in the garden is going to be lovely, because it just is not. There's this stupid idea that people have that once they come over here, everything is going to be wonderful. Well, it's ridiculous, because this is a world of reality. It's not a world of illusion. And there are all sorts of things that obviously one has to adjust oneself to. One has to learn through experiences. And invariably, of course, if one is going to learn, if one is going to progress, if one is going to find true happiness, there's many things that one must readjust, put right within oneself, and it's not necessarily an easy thing to do. And you can't achieve something here just by wishful thinking. You've got to work for it, you've got to make the effort. And in a sense, it's true to say that as you sow, you shall reap. And inasmuch as a person may be an ordinary person who has got many good points and qualities, but has his or her faults, I mean, these things must be adjusted. You don't suddenly become an angel. You don't suddenly enter into paradise. You don't suddenly have everything you want put on your lap. There are souls here who wait for you, who receive you, who give you a welcome and help you, people you've known and loved, etc., who've also made some progress. But the point is that there's always much to learn, much to experience.
Have you had any people you've helped? Have you had any interesting experiences you can tell us about any particular person that you've been able to help, Michael?
Oh yes, of course, I've got so many. I mean,
can you have one particular one, an interesting one?
Well, I hardly know where to start. I suppose it's one of the most interesting cases I've ever had. It was a person who committed suicide, since we were on suicide, who quite frankly had reached the point where there was no return as far as he was concerned, who had lived a life which in many senses was blameless, but who had, through circumstances not of his own making, but through the making another person's life, created a situation set up he felt he could no longer face up to. He took his own life, but you see, the point is that he wasn't escaping. He thought he was escaping for something, but the person that he was associated with was really the person who really needed help more than he did. Mm-hmm. And although he made every effort to help that person on Earth, I suppose he felt he came up against a brick wall which he couldn't pierce, but on this side he was able to do more than he could ever have done on Earth, which might in a sense seem to have justified his suicide, because it doesn't really. But the point is that since his passing, he's been able to help this person tremendously in a mental sense by sort of impression and by enabling this person to, I suppose this person having that freedom by him committing suicide, in a sense made it easier for that person to do something which possibly they were unable to do previously. In other words, this person remarried, this woman remarried, and she gradually began to realize through her marriage pathway that the man that had committed suicide, her previous husband, was in comparison to her new marriage and husband a saint. I mean, the point is that he was able indirectly to help this person to find not only a new way of life, but also to learn certain lessons which he couldn't help her with when he was there. This may sound the most paradoxical, odd sort of situation and case, but he was able to influence this person. Now she's much older, she is in a position to see for herself her own faults and failings, and she has reassessed her previous marriage to this person, and his influence has been brought to bear to such an extent on her life that she's completely changed woman. And in consequence, she has achieved a state of evolution which no doubt she wouldn't have achieved if he hadn't committed suicide. Now, this may sound like an excuse for taking one's own life. It isn't meant to be at all. But sometimes, you see, we think too much of ourselves and we don't appreciate that sometimes we affect other people's lives to such an extent, as they indeed can affect ours, that we don't always see the picture clearly. And this man sees his own life in an entirely different sense and way too. He has made tremendous progress, not only in helping his previous wife to find a new realization of truth and a realization of values, but he in himself has been able to help his son, who died in infancy, and who's grown up over here, been able to become, as it were, a father figure, and able to help him make progress, and also in a strange kind of way, though this must seem odd, though the soul was a young son, was able to influence a father. If only one could realize that we are all so interwoven and intertwined together that we are all, without realizing, a part of the other, not necessarily in a physical sense, but much more so in a mental and a spiritual sense. I mean, this business of families and relationships, important though they seem on earth, are not necessarily quite so important as they may seem when one realizes that the whole universe, the whole of human life, and not only human life, but animal life, is all part of the same spirit. And when we realize that we are all sharing and taking part in this spirit, which is life itself, although we take shape and form, we come into earth and we go and become this or that person, we are really only a minute part of a complete, I don't know how, a group soul. I wish I could explain this business of group souls, because although we love our individuality, we flatter ourselves on our individual personality, and it's important and vital that we should develop individually, and we retain individuality. It's as if we are, without realizing it, all little units in a great universe. And if only one can understand this, we begin to think and act differently. The whole world would be changed if people understood that you are all part of the same flowing spirit. And we're all making contributions one to the other. Sometimes it's so subtle we hardly know it, we don't realize it. But we on this side do, of course.
There's something I was going to ask you, Jerry. Can you tell us something about dreams? If they're reality, sometimes we get all extraordinary dreams, but it's from the other side, or...
Well, dreams, of course, in themselves can be the active brain concocting and creating picturization. In other words, these are superficial things which have no bearing, no reality as such. These are merely figments of mind, of brain, were pictures, you might say, in which everything seems very real. Indeed, that is the joy and beauty of it all, is that the mentality, the power of thought is such that everything is conceivable and possible by it and through it and with it. But there is a vast difference, of course, between the things that one conjures up in sleep state, which are really, in a sense, dreams, and have no foundation in fact. But nevertheless, there's a vast difference. There is the reality of spiritual contact, of being able to leave the body and enter into an environment, mental environment of spirit, and meet and converse with people who passed on before. But I think one has to learn to differentiate, and I think that one should be able to differentiate between what is obviously a dream which has no real foundation, no reality as such, than that which is a real thing, an experience of the body, spiritual body, leaving the physical body for a short duration of time, which may only be a few seconds in your time, and entering into a mental state and being in harmony with, temporarily, this world or the inhabitants of this world. You see, time, distance, space, all these things are illusion. The reality of spirit is such that once you've experienced it, there's no doubting it. I think that one should soon be able to differentiate between what is obviously just a figment of mind, brain, creation, as it were, which has no reality as such, though it may seem real while you're experiencing it, than that which is the reality of spiritual thinking or communication. There again, of course, it is possible, let's face it, to link up with astral conditions much more easily, and sometimes the astral conditions are such that the reality is there, although it's confused and mixed up with one's own thought and idea. During sleep state, you can get a weird mixture, you see. You see, there are so many untapped sources of consciousness, and these are all layers of consciousness, and so that there are times when you do have a layer of consciousness of a world which is so interwoven with yours that it is a mixture of yours and a mixture of some world which is intermingled with yours, which is a separate unit nevertheless. In other words, I think that a lot of people enter into the astral, and since many of the things in the astral are similar and like unto the material, indeed are almost identical, that it's difficult to differentiate whether you've actually conjured up something of your own without realizing it during sleep state, or entered into the astral and for a brief space of time, if I can use the sense of time, you've entered into a reality of experience which, well, of course, I can only hope that when you do pass out, you'll bypass. Most people do, but there is this very real astral world which is intermingled with yours, which is so similar and so like, and which in many instances reproduces everything. It's like a mirror, this astral world, and reproduces not only the present time of your world, but the past too. And you can fall back into space and into time, and you can go forward even a bit, because the astral plane around the earth, which is intermingled, is not only reflective of all that has happened in your world, but to some extent is an indication of what is to come. And indeed it's quite true to say that that's why, of course, people, when they're interested in spiritualism or psychic, sometimes get remarkable messages about the future, which are very accurate. Is not necessarily because they come from higher souls, but of course they come from astral souls who are so near the earth that they can predict. Mm-hmm. And that's where one has to be very careful. When one keeps on pressing, as some people do, for material messages, that's where the danger lies. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that it's best never to press for material messages, but if some soul whom you know and trust can come and advise you of their own free will and initiative without pressure on your part, you can be sure that it's pretty good advice and worth following out. But when these people go to mediums and keep on press for material things, and they get often good response and material messages which are very evidential, or shall we say, which often prove themselves with experience and time, sometimes, I'm not saying they're necessarily evil influences, but they're certainly not educative, and they're certainly not very helpful in the mental and spiritual sense. But since the vast majority of spiritualists are only content with material messages and material advice, and live on the fringe, it is this fringe which is dangerous, in my opinion, and the vast majority of spiritualists are only on the fringe. Anyway, I can't stay any longer, but I hope to come back again sometime and talk more on these matters, if it'll help. Yes. Anyway, it's nice talking to you, and lovely us all here. And God bless you. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mark. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.